Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 424. Happy 4th of July week, everyone. Hope you're having or had a fantastic holiday. And wherever you are, that you are with friends and family and relaxing, having fun, and just really enjoying this middle of summertime. We've had crazy, crazy weather here in Chicago, and but we did eke out some good sunshine a little bit this weekend. I am so excited about today's show. It's always exciting when I meet another GLBT person, really trailblazing and doing amazing things. And I had the privilege of sitting down with OUT director, lesbian director Lee Silverman. She is in Chicago for her big debut at the Goodman Theater. And if you're going to have a directorial debut in Chicago, the Goodman is a good place to have it. And Lee is the director of Chinglish, the new David Henry Hwang play that is at the main stage right now at the Goodman and garnering absolutely 4 stars, highly recommended, enormous critical and audience response, because this show is so funny, so timely, so well done on all points. It's just a triumph. So Lee Silverman, the director of Chinglish, is here with me today. We sit down, we talk about her career as a woman in theater, as a lesbian in theater, and also her trip here to Chicago. Also about some of her partnerships where she has worked with amazing playwrights, including one of the 5 lesbian brothers, Lisa Crone, on her production of Well, which took Lee to Broadway at a very young age. So it's a very exciting show. Plus what's going on in the news, many, many, many other news reports now about same-sex marriage, not only in the U.S., but around the world. The movement in New York that this month New Yorkers will be able to marry is creating quite a ripple effect. And though other states or countries have not declared same-sex marriage, many are taking a temperature as to where their region, their country, their state happens to be on this issue. And New York has definitely provided some enormous momentum. So a lot of that in our news stories, plus what's going on in the theater. 3 great shows that you are not going to want to miss. Sit back, relax, and let's get into this show.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. In Michigan, a state house committee recently approved a pair of anti-gay bills. Republicans on the Oversight, Reform, and Ethics Committee voted to prohibit employers from offering benefits to anyone not married or related to an employee. Republicans, outnumbering the Democrats 4-2, also voted to make it illegal for any union to negotiate benefits for unmarried couples. Same-sex marriage is illegal in the state.
In Alaska, a convertible carrying the Grand Marshal of Anchorage's Pride Fest parade hit and killed a man just as the event began on June 25th. The victim was James Crump, age 50. Eagle resident Edith Bailey, age 70, was the driver. The parade was canceled.
The Out in Equal Workplace Summit will take place October 25th through the 28th in Dallas, Texas. Speakers are JCPenney CEO/Chairman Mike Allman, out-gay Fort Worth, Texas City Council Member Joel Burns, and Assistant Secretary Kathy Martinez, Head of the United States Department of Labor Office of Disability Employment Policy. Other guests include Out Bravo exec Andy Cohen and lesbian actress Meredith Baxter.
In Wisconsin, United Methodist Church UMC lesbian pastor, the Reverend Amy DeLong, has received a 20-day suspension for officiating a same-sex union ceremony in 2009. A 13-member UMC court handed down the suspension on June 23rd, unanimously finding her guilty of the charge. She was acquitted of another charge of violating the denomination's requirement of celibacy. DeLong had pled not guilty to the charges. The suspension began July 1st.
In California, five people were wounded June 25th at a shooting near San Francisco's Gay Pride activities. A 16-year-old boy and an 18-year-old man were arrested on suspicion of assault with a deadly weapon, as well as charges related to gun possession and gang affiliation.
Openly gay New York representative Daniel O'Donnell is engaged to be married. O'Donnell, age 50, has been with his partner John Banta for 31 years.
New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg plans to launch a tourism campaign that takes advantage of the state's new same-sex marriage law. The NYC I Do campaign will create millions of dollars in additional economic impact to the city's $31 billion tourism industry.
Texas may get its first out-gay U.S. attorney. President Obama is set to nominate U.S. Magistrate Judge Robert Lee Pittman as a U.S. attorney for the Western District of Texas, an area that stretches from El Paso to Austin.
Lambda Legal has filed a lawsuit seeking marriage equality on behalf of Garden State Equality, New Jersey's LGBT advocacy organization, and seven same-sex couples and their children, who the plaintiffs say were harmed from the unequal civil union system. The case combines both state and federal claims. It argues that the civil union law violates both the New Jersey Constitution and the 14th Amendment of the federal Constitution.
In Rhode Island, an LGBT organization is asking Governor Lincoln Chafee to veto a civil union bill that has passed the state Senate. After trying for same-sex marriage for several years, the state House approved civil unions in May. In addition, the bill makes heavy concessions to Rhode Island's Roman Catholic community. Chafee has said he will sign the bill.
In California, the Roman Catholic Diocese of San Diego initially denied funeral services for a gay man. Businessman John Sanfilippo had been a member of Our Lady of the Rosary in Little Italy for decades and even left money to the church in his will. However, the church initially said it would be unable to host his funeral services, although church officials eventually said they would allow the funeral. Sanfilippo's family and friends, including his partner of 28 years, have since arranged to have these services at Holy Cross Cemetery and Mausoleum in San Diego.
In Minnesota, 23-year-old transgender woman Krishan McDonald is being held in solitary confinement in the Hennepin County Jail. McDonald has been charged for the murder of Dean Schmitz, age 47. Despite identifying as a woman, McDonald is being held in the men's section of the county jail in downtown Minneapolis.
In world news, in Brazil, a judge has approved the country's first same-sex marriage. Sao Paulo State Judge Fernando Henrique Pinto says he has ruled that the two men can convert their civil union into a marriage. Brazil's Supreme Court ruled in May that same-sex civil unions must be recognized, but stopped short of saying yes to gay marriage. And millions of people danced and marched down the main avenue of Sao Paulo, the country's most populous city, June 26th, in an event billed as the world's largest gay pride parade. In Latin America, other gay pride marches were held over the weekend in Colombia, Mexico, Chile, and El Salvador.
The Australian Greens political party is saying that the Western Australian Labor Party, ALP's support for same-sex union shows there is unstoppable support for same-sex marriage. The West Australian Labor Party passed a motion supporting same-sex marriage at its recent state conference, following the lead of the Queensland ALP.
In England, police have released the name of a man found dead on London's Clapham Common, a gay cruising area. The death of Eric Anthony James, 49, is being called unexplained, but authorities believe James probably died of natural causes. Two men were arrested and have been bailed out. They will return to court in August.
In France, New York's legalization of same-sex marriage inspired participants in Paris's annual Pride March Saturday to call on presidential candidates to do the same. In June, President Nicolas Sarkozy's UMP party played a major role in rejecting a socialist bill to legalize marriage equality in France. A recent poll showed 63% of French people in favor of same-sex marriage.
And in entertainment news, Neil Patrick Harris has announced his engagement to longtime partner David Burtka. They proposed to each other more than 5 years ago, but kept their engagement secret until New York Governor Andrew Cuomo legalized same-sex marriage.
Blue Water has announced a special comic book project featuring Madonna. Female Force Madonna will be released in August and have a cover price of $3.99.
CeeLo Green donned a Patti LaBelle wig and blouse in tribute to the legendary singer at a recent BET Awards. LaBelle, who was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award, sang a couple classics, including Lady Marmalade.
True Blood's gay secret has been exposed. Sookie's best friend, Tara, played by Rutina Wesley, has become a cage fighter and is sleeping with a sexy girlfriend named Naomi. However, Wesley is reluctant to label Tara as bisexual or lesbian. I think it just happened.
Javier Colon edged performer Dia Frampton, as well as openly lesbian singers Vicky Martinez and Beverly McClellan, to win the first season of the NBC reality competition show The Voice. The top eight singers from the show, which include out singer Nakia and gay fave Frenchie Davis, will embark on a nationwide tour.
Actress Charlize Theron continues to stick by her promise to not marry until every U.S. citizen can wed, regardless of sexual orientation.
Lindsay Lohan has completed her 35-day house arrest stint. A technician went to the actress's Venice home June 29th, removing the alcohol monitoring bracelet. She is now under the supervision of probation.
And rapper Lil B has released his CD, I'm Gay. However, despite the title, the musician doesn't rap about homosexuality, and there are no revelations about his own sexuality. When Lil B revealed the CD's title in April, he received criticism from fellow rappers, death threats from fans, and concerns from GLAAD.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hi, this is Lucas from The Clicks, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of July 4th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Looking for comedy, fashion, and catfights? Well, the Real Housewives have nothing on the ladies of Circle Theater's production of the witty 1930s comedy, The Women, playing now through August 14th. For more information or to order tickets to The Women, go to circle-theater.org. Sharpen your claws. These ladies don't play fair.
Say it loud and proud, I'm with the homosexuals. About Face Theater presents The Homosexuals by Philip Dawkins, running through July 24th at Victory Gardens Richard Christensen Theater. Garnering critical praise, 3 stars from the Chicago Tribune and audience laughs, this hilarious and heartwarming play is for anyone who's ever fallen in love with a friend. Get your tickets now for The Homosexuals at aboutfacetheater.com.
Main Stage is Chicago's hottest new North Side venue. Don't miss upcoming shows at Main Stage, including comedian Jeff Pardo, swing band Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. Enjoy live music in the pub every Tuesday with no cover. Check out mainstage.com. That's MAYNE stage.com for details. Main Stage, all the shows you love, all on one stage. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
You can feel the miles beneath your tires on these strange streets. You can feel a lifetime of wandering in your heart now. Taken to your feet, you can chase the love of a beauty. Led you far from home and hold out your hands to the ones around you and feel a little less alone. We both knew there were not words for this. The story would play the way that this heart's pain would have it live. We both knew that the question was so much more than nice. Still in
Lee Silverman is an award-winning New York theater director who has found great currency in forging relationships with playwrights. She directed well on Broadway and won an Obie for her direction of In the Wake, both written by Lisa Crone. And now her longtime relationship with David Henry Hwang has brought her to Chicago for her directorial debut here at the Goodman with his new play, Chinglish. So I'm just thrilled to be able to sit down and have a chat with Lee. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
How are you enjoying Chicago?
I love Chicago.
Have you spent time here before this?
I've never been here, and I feel like I've gone through all the seasons multiple times.
Yes,
every day. Like, it's like, I don't know. We've had so many tornado warnings. I mean, you don't get this in New York. No. I love it.
See, we're not boring.
No.
We're extremely exciting. It's like code red.
Totally. I mean, like I heard about extreme Midwestern, you know, but I was just like, I had no idea.
Yeah, we seriously have had like heat while you've been here. We've had...
It's been 100. Yeah, it was sleeting in the first week that I was here. We've had the tornadoes, of course. We've had the, you know, the rain.
Yeah.
The rain, the cold. Yeah. I mean, like every day, it's like a whole new, I have no idea what to wear. I'm walking down the street being like, I'm overdressed, I'm underdressed, I forgot my umbrella, I'm carrying an umbrella, it's not raining. I don't know. It's been fantastic. It's been great.
Well, obviously, I mean, this has become, and I'm biased, albeit, but... this has really, I think, become one of the most exciting cities in the U.S. for theater by far. Now, if we're talking about the corporate arm of theater, of course, New York is, and Broadway is definitely
New York is, you know, for commercial theater, you know, there's no other place like New York. But in terms of artistry, in terms of experimentation, in terms of quantity and quality, I think there's really nothing that compares to Chicago, actually.
And you've been really... a huge part of your career has been working on projects either from the ground up or early inception all the way through and working with writers and new work. So what brought you here is exactly in line with that. Talk to me just a little bit about how you got involved in theater. I mean, where are you from and what was, you know, did you see like a chorus line at 10 or something and were like, a life in theater?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's my gay male
story. Yeah, so. No, it's really, you know, I was a total theater nerd my whole life. And luckily when I think I was about 15, I had gone away on this, you know, theater abroad kind of thing. And I had this acting teacher and she pulled me aside one day and she said, oh, Lee, you're terrible. And it was such a relief, actually, because I was like, oh, this is really great. And she said, but you're really smart, and you should read these plays. And she handed me Shakespeare, she handed me Chekhov, she handed me Ibsen, and she said, I'd really love for you to work with me on other people's scenes this summer and see what it's like from this side. And that was it. I was so...
Is this in New York? Are you a New Yorker?
Now I'm a New Yorker, yeah. But
Originally?
Originally, I grew up in Washington, D.C.
Oh, another good theater town.
So, yeah. So it's been... So that was really it. I had that summer theater program kind of changed my life. And then I've been directing ever since I went to Carnegie Mellon. I have an undergraduate degree in directing. I have a graduate degree in playwriting, which I have because I wanted to work on new plays. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I get it. Like, how do you ground plan where to put a kitchen sink in, you know, Come Back Little Sheba? But like, how do you work with writers and what is that? And I just felt like the best way to learn how to work with writers was to be in a room with writers. And I learned more about directing during that time that I was a playwright. Actually, I learned about play structure and character revelation. You know, you just, it's like, oh, that's like being immersed in the technical side of playwriting and also how to sit in a room with a writer, how to be part of that process. It was very important, an important step. And then I moved to New York and I've been in New York about 17 years now.
Yeah, so you're a New Yorker.
I am.
How did the relationship begin with Lisa Crone? Because obviously that's a... pivotal relationship for your career and I'm sure just your art and your learning process as well. And for people who don't know Lisa Crone, well, people may obviously know the play well and know that, you know, she wrote and starred in that, but also that she is a member of the Five Lesbian Brothers, which was an amazing theater troupe and continues to, keep the envelope pushed, I guess.
True.
And you've worked with them too.
So. I have, yeah. So I had was assistant directing on a Five Lesbian Brothers play called Brides of the Moon in New York. And Lisa was just doing a solo show called 2.5 Minute Ride that she was doing in New York at the Public, also sort of simultaneously. And she said, I'm working on this new play. I got this TCG grant. Do you want to work on it with me? And I said, oh, yeah, you know, I'd love to. And she said, I burn through directors. I've never worked with the same director twice, and I've had three directors on 2.5-minute ride. So
the exception to the rule.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. And I was like, I don't know. And she's like, do you still want to do it? And I was like, okay. You know, like, what are you going to say? And
yeah.
And so that was the beginning of what's now, like, a 12-year collaboration. Yeah. So I directed that play, which we worked on for 5 years, turned into Well.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very extensive development process, I think, because she was in the play and
right.
was writing it.
Right.
There was
which is tricky.
It's very tricky.
I've done that kind of work with somebody being in it and writing, and it's tricky for
it's
them
wild.
And for everybody.
Totally. And also, that was the first play she'd ever written with other people in it,
mm-hmm.
Because her work had really been solo work, except for when she was writing with the Five Lesbian Brothers. So for her to write that play... and it became sort of a running joke in the play, was that it's a solo show with other people in it.
Right.
And
right.
and so that was, so that that took 5 years. We opened the show at the Public Theater in New York in 2004, and then we did it out at ACT in San Francisco in 2005, and then it went to Broadway in 2006.
So how significant was that moment as a lesbian, with a lesbian writer performer, to have, you know, you both at the head of this moniker of this kind of Broadway critical hit?
Well, it was...
Because that's unusual.
Radical.
I'm trying to remember radical is a better word.
I have to say that at the time, I mean, it has... I think it has changed quite a bit, actually, since then, even in the short number of years. But at the time, I was only the 7th woman to ever direct a play on Broadway.
Yeah.
A straight play on Broadway. And... it was...
When you say straight play,
I mean
not
a musical. Yeah. not so straight play. But
just clarify.
Yeah, exactly. But it, you know, so that at the time, and also, like, I was, I think, the youngest woman, and or the youngest person, and the one of, you know, the only, the 7th woman. I mean, it was like there was some crazy statistic about it. And I think that to say, okay, there's that, and then also to say, to have two lesbians,
right.
you know, in the sort of head of the production in a play that was unapologetically gay.
Right.
I mean, I think it
and
was...
And unapologetically personal, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
About her life and...
It, totally. So it was very... I mean, I think it was really radical. I mean, I think, actually, in the last 5 or 6 years since we did the play, there have been many more women actually who have directed plays on Broadway.
Sure.
But it's been at the time, I think, which is great. And
yes.
I think that, you know, like with everything, there is this trend towards, you know, oh, you can never have imagined like a woman sportscaster on a football field. And now
right.
that's all they have. So,
right.
you know, there's sort of this way in which I think it will stop being quite so radical.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also just feel like in general, it's women are not usually at the, you know, in that position. You know, generally people think of men being directors, they think of men being producers, they
right.
they don't often think of women taking on that, those kinds of leadership roles. So I
yeah.
think that that there's still a little bit of resistance to it.
Yeah, you know, I've interviewed Tina Landau a few times when she comes to Chicago, and you know, we were talking about and something I'll ask you as well, just about, you know, being a lesbian and how that impacts your work and the lens through which you work. And she was saying to me that, you know, first I have to get through the lens and the barrier of being a woman, because it's exactly what you were saying,
yeah.
that almost at the time, and that was probably 2 or 3 years ago when we had this conversation, that, you know, that, she said, was probably a bigger hurdle. She felt more prejudice, more bias against her being a woman. And just because she's a gay woman doesn't make her any more into the club,
yeah.
even though it's primarily gay men.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you feel about that? Have you experienced that, or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would agree with that statement. I mean, I feel like it's changing. I feel
yes.
like people are always changing, like things are always progressing. But I do feel that it's harder. I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
I mean, but show me a field where it's not.
Right.
Really.
Right.
And I think, you know, it is, I mean, I take very seriously the responsibility of saying, like, okay, I got to this place, like, it's my job to keep pushing
yeah.
forward, and I think Tina feels that way. You know, I think
and
that they're
mentoring
women, and I think that, you know, it's it's a great privilege, I feel, and I'm so honored to sort of be someone who it's like, oh, well, she got to do this thing, or right. she gets to direct these plays or have this kind of these kinds of opportunities, and because of that, there will be other women yeah. who will follow. And I feel like I very much am in great debt to the women, you know, the great women. I mean, I grew up in Washington, D.C. Zelda was one of the first women artistic directors, right. you know, ever, and to grow up in a city where that was true, where she ran that town, that yeah. theater town, yeah. I mean, it was hugely influential. Yeah. I mean, I owe her great debt because yeah. she showed me that it was possible.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, it's I'm just part of the continuum.
How is the lens then for you as a lesbian? I mean, I know you were involved with the Bebo Brinker Chronicles, yeah. and that may be, you know, fun and frothy and a part of our lesbian history based on lesbian pulp fiction yeah. Novels, or Bebo Brinker, the character, one of the most seminal, I think, pulp.
Totally.
Leading.
I mean, I loved that play. I mean, when I directed Bebo and the Five Lesbian Brothers play that mm-hmm. I directed called Oedipus of Palm Springs and In the Wake, and there are plays that I feel like I've directed that touch me very deeply in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, how I identify, mm-hmm. what I'm interested in, you know, where I feel like the intersection of my sexuality and those plays' sexualities live. Right. But I have to say that, you know, I also feel like it is my job as a director to not be the one who's personally connected uh-huh. in that way. I mean, I feel like it's
Do
my
you
job
feel more
to tell
detached
the story.
And so you does it
I just
feel
it's
like
just that I don't feel like it's the
to...
requirement. Mm-hmm. Like, I sort of feel like with writers, there's something like they have to be connected, right,
sure.
to some piece of it.
So they can get the truth out.
Exactly. And so that I feel like, you know, as the director, I will always find something to connect to, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's a requirement to do my job that I feel like, oh, I mean, I feel like a sex scene is a sex scene. Like,
right.
like you got to make people look like they're in love.
Right.
Girl, girl, boy, girl, boy, whoever,
it.
Whatever. Like, you gotta believe it.
You
gotta find it sexy.
And...
You have to want it. You know, you have to tell that story. And
right.
so I just feel like on some level there's the craft of it.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, I feel I like the girl scenes
right?
a lot, of course. But, you know, I do feel like it's also my job to
yeah.
be able to, no matter what the exact content is, to be able to tell that story.
Yeah, just the human experience.
The human experience, absolutely.
So do you think that there is still a gay aesthetic in theater, or is there a gay theater anymore? Or and if there was, do you ever feel like you were a part of that, or you are a part of that, or do you feel like that's evolving?
It's interesting. Last night, David Wong and I were doing a sort of pre-show talk,
uh-huh.
and somebody asked him if he thought that minority theater company should still exist.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the same question, right?
It is.
I mean,
and
we still need places that foster our stories, or has it branched out? But then wouldn't all theaters kind of be the same? You know, if... I mean, it always is kind of interesting when I see in Chicago, like, a particular playwright is being done by Victory Gardens and Steppenwolf and Goodman and some small theater. I'm like, okay, well, what distinguishes these theaters?
Yeah.
Like, in a mission or... they all just do that playwright?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't know. It's interesting, right?
It's interesting because, like, right now, David's play Yellowface, which I had directed
mm-hmm.
in New York, it's having a production here at Silk Road Theater
right,
Company,
right,
which
right.
is a small theater
yeah,
company
up and
that
coming,
focuses on
yeah.
Asian and, I think, Middle Eastern
yes.
writers and actors. And I think, you know, so it's sort of amazing that David's having a production at the Goodman, and he's also having this production at
yeah.
Silk Road. The production that's at Silk Road is a very, I would say, American play. It's about the American experience of David Wong, this playwright in
mm-hmm.
America, being the kind of political spokesperson for Asian issues.
Right.
And that's what Yellowface is about. And then you have the play Chinglish that's at the Goodman that is bilingual and has takes place in China and has a mostly Chinese cast. So
right.
in a way, it's like it sort of turns that notion on its head a little
Interesting.
Bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, I feel like the more places there are for gay stories to be seen, for
right.
minority stories to be seen, the better it is, because I feel, to me, like just the more opportunities there are for us all to find representation, the better it is. And
right.
I feel like, you know, I don't know, would a 22-year-old gay kid like go to the Goodman, or go to, like, you know, About Face, or go
right.
to one of the gay, you know, other theater or something? You know, I
yep.
think that there's got to be
right.
a whole range of opportunities and possibilities for people so that they can find the places that they feel like they're being seen.
Yeah. So talk to me about Chinglish. What's the story, and what's the story?
So Chinglish is a sort of outrageous comedy about an American businessman who goes to Guiyang, China, to try and sell signage to the party officials of the city, Guiyang, which is in the Guizhou province, which is the poorest province in China. And it's Guiyang is the capital, and it's a city that's just poised to turn international, but it's not international yet.
Okay.
And so it's a bit of a story about the failure of communication. Mm-hmm. And what's fun...
And I'm sure that this is probably going to be... I mean, this is a story more and more of the industry between China and America.
Absolutely.
That many Americans are experiencing, and I don't think there's been really a play or a movie that's really explored this kind of...
And certainly not this way. I mean, part of the fun of this play is that the people on stage don't all understand each other, but because the audience is reading the translation simultaneously
to
while it's... There's subtitles.
Because
and so
there's
while,
multiple languages
exactly, so it's bilingual, and so not everyone on stage understands... No one on stage understands everything that's going on, but the audience understands everything that's going on, and so it provides, I mean, I have to say, a kind of enjoyment that I have rarely experienced, because in a way the audience is just in on all of it.
Yes.
Also, the other day this woman was sitting in front of me, and at the end of the show she stood up and she said, "I feel like I learned Chinese." I was like, yes, like it felt like a real victory. I have to say, it's just it's romantic, it's very sexy. There's a little bit of intrigue. There's there's kind of a nod to a kind of Glengarry Glen Ross kind of business deal-y kind of thing. And I think, as you say, it's really about a political climate between the U.S. and China, and one that is very timely, unexplored, and I think really underrepresented.
Yeah. So how did you start working with David? I mean, obviously you've had... This is... playwrights obviously trust you. They are coming back to you. This is something that, as I said earlier, you know, has become a currency for you that... you get to evolve, and a writer continually evolves, and then you get to build that kind of future and career together.
Well, it's interesting. David and I, so this is David and my second collaboration. Mm-hmm. He had just finished the first draft of Yellow Face, five or six years ago, and I had just done well on Broadway. And Oscar Eustace, who had just taken over the Public Theater at the time, called me and he said, "Listen, David Wong wrote this new play. It's really great. It's called Yellow Face. I think you'd be the perfect director for it." And I was like, what would make me the perfect... Like, what is he thinking? And then I read it, and I was like, oh, it's this autobiographical, meta-theatrical play about race and politics, which was sort of exactly what Well was, kind of the structure of Well. And so I met with David, and we had this sort of really awkward first date. And I got home, and I was like, well, that did not go well at all. And he called me the next day, and he said, "You know, I don't think you understand the play at all." And I was like, okay. And he was like, "But I think your questions about it were really right, and the ways that you don't understand the play are exactly the things that I need to explore." And he said, "So I think, even though I don't know that you totally get it, I feel like you're really smart, and I feel like you can help me figure out how to make people understand this play better." And so although it was a really not my best first date, it was definitely the beginning of... Actually, I think it made us trust each other instantly, because I think he felt like I was honest and I felt like he was direct. And we were able to hold on to that. And we had a very rough preview period with that play in Los Angeles. We worked on it a lot during previews, 30 pages a day of rewrites. I mean, it was really difficult. The play had totally transformed by the time we opened in Los Angeles, from the kind of play it was when we started to where it was when we ended.
Model happening the same with Chinglish? Do you
know,
feel like there are that many rewrites? And
I
what are the challenges with this play?
This play is really different. This play, I mean, I would say Yellow Face was a play that we were trying to shape, work on style, tone. That play changed over the preview period a huge amount, and then we did the play in New York. It changed again a huge amount. Kind of, that play was sprawling and epic. This play, I feel, came out of the oven a cake. Like, it is just a cake. And he had a vision for it. He knew the story he wanted to tell. The plotting's really clear. I mean, we're still doing rewrites. We're putting in some cuts tonight. We're doing, you know, we did a huge amount of work yesterday before the preview. I mean, we're still in it.
Yeah.
But the thing itself is kind of baked. And so there's the kind of process, this preview process really has been, you know, first of all, because it's bilingual, And we have subtitles. Usually in a comedy, the thing you're working on is like, actor tells a joke, audience laughs. So you're just working out the triangulation between the two actors on stage and then the audience mm-hmm. laughing and like getting that timing. Well, in this play, we have two actors telling the joke and then a person running the slide projector, you know, mm-hmm. that puts the subtitle up, and the timing has to be exactly right. Mm. And so it's like a four-way.
You're finding a new rhythm. Totally. It's a comedy with this, then.
Totally. So that's part of the experience of the play, and figuring that part of it out. But also, I think this play is unusual in that it's a love story about miscommunication, and so there's this way in which exactly the nature of how these people fall in love based on a miscommunication mm-hmm. and how that miscommunication ends up being revealed has mm-hmm. been kind of the nature of some of the work that we've been doing. And it's complicated and subtle and I think has been a really interesting part of our process.
So what's next? What's next for you? You leave Chicago
Chicago. I'm going to work on a musical for 3 weeks. I've been developing a new musical with, New York Theater Workshop, and I'm going to do a residency with them for 3 weeks.
And what is that?
It's called Piece of My Heart. It's actually a true story about a man named Burt Burns who wrote the music for Piece of My Heart and I Want Candy and Hang on Sloopy and Twist and Shout and some of the most incredible songs of the 50s and 60s. He wrote all of them. And nobody sort of knows that one guy wrote all those songs. And his children, he died when he was 37, and his children, oh, wow. who are now, you know, grown up, of course, mm-hmm. they have sort of set out to get their father's story known, and so they want to tell the story of his life using his music. So I've been working with them on developing that musical. I'm doing a show in the fall at Manhattan Theater Club with David Hyde Pierce, which I'm very excited about, and
another
a comedy
member of the community.
He's so amazing, and he is so beautiful in this play. So I'm very excited about that. It's called Close Up Space, and then hopefully we'll be bringing Chinglish to New York and mm-hmm. continue to work on it.
So who are a few dream people that you want to work with? Whether that be playwright, whether that be composer, or a musical artist you like, or an actor, who would you love to work with if you could just manifest that by putting it out in the universe on the podcast?
Oh my God. Let's see. I love Lily Tomlin. Mm-hmm. She was one of our producers for Bebo mm-hmm. Brinker, and I
know Lily. She's great.
She's so great. I feel like I want her to do a play.
Yeah.
She's so fantastic.
She's coming here next year to do her one-woman show. She comes every now and again, every few years.
She's so incredible.
Yeah. I was so talking about a wonderful collaboration of writer and
totally,
you know, performer.
Totally.
It's
I mean, she's
brilliant.
Incredible. I mean, I have to say that this season in New York was so exciting because it also between like Scottsboro Boys, which dealt with mm-hmm. you know, race in this really interesting
way.
One of
our podcast co-hosts is Coleman Domingo.
Oh my God. Well, Coleman is a good friend, and he's so great. So he, you know, that show and Book of Mormon and Motherfucker with a Hat and
Normal
I mean, it
Heart,
was just
I
Normal
mean,
Heart. It was like a such a radical yeah. actually season on Broadway, and I feel like it was like a revolution, and I feel like there are so many people who are doing such really interesting and exciting work right yeah. now, and it feels to me like the thing that I've always aspired to is to have writers that want to work with me again mm-hmm. and do, you know, I just did my third collaboration with David Greenspan mm-hmm. and we're working on a fourth, you know, so there's, you know, Lisa Crone has a play that she's been commissioned to write from Playwrights Horizons, which I'm looking forward to working on. You know, David Wong and I, he has a new idea that he's sort of cooking up. I mean, I just feel like my goal has been, I mean, my main collaboration are with writers, and
right.
the thing that I aspire to is to have writers who, you know, trust me and show me their new work and say, great, let's do it again. And
you sound like the ultimate theatrical shepherd. I mean, I have never met somebody that I think truly somebody comes to you and then you help shepherd their idea and shape it. And it sounds to me like you're kind of what I do. You know, you're a person who asks the right questions and then somebody gets to understand what their story is or gets to really see or have to convince or convey
yeah.
what it is they're trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's collaboration. I mean, to me, that's collaboration at
yeah.
its best.
Yeah.
And I think it's the reason that I like directing is right. because I think like, okay, what is the story and how can we tell it better? Right. What's the key here? What's the most theatrical, exciting, surprising, right. interesting, dynamic, sexy?
So
like,
it's less thing? About form. It's less about that you're just going to do drama or comedy or musicals. It's that you can, if you have that, then you can do that in any model.
I believe so.
Because it works with any model, which seems to me why you have gone from doing solo show or shows like The Five Lesbian Brothers to doing new musicals to doing a comedy like Chinglish to doing, you know, dramatic work that you've done as well.
Yeah.
And even style, which
yeah.
is what Bebo Brinker is.
Yeah.
You know, more of a style on it. Well, I hope everybody will come out. It's a great time of year to go see a comedy and go see a story that I think is going to feel very American in kind of our the humor of miscommunication. I think we can all probably relate to. Chinglish is on sale and running now at the Goodman Theater. You can get tickets at goodmantheater.org or at their box office or call the box office or in person. It's running through July 24th, and I highly recommend it and really encourage all of you to come and see it. And Lee, I hope you will come back to Chicago.
Thank you.
I hope these
Thank
collaborations
you.
And connections and the crazy weather will have not driven you away.
No,
because we could always have you come in January and February, and it will be one
No, well, everyone said you're so lucky you're going to be here in the summer. It's so nice in the summer. Okay, I just want to say, I have all these shorts here. I have only one warm pair.
Well, you're also in a dark, cold theater.
That's true. That's true.
Time.
That's true.
Lee, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everyone, I hope you had a wonderful 4th. Next week, I am thrilled to be back with you because we don't take holidays here at the Windy City Queercast. We just keep bringing to you gay news, entertainment, culture, politics, all the stories you want to hear. So thanks for being with me.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
My home, sweet.